You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
Or maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. We have one game left. We are nearing the end of the MLS season.
And Christmas
that game,
time is here.
Yeah, that game, Dave, is
MLS Cup, baby. This is what we live for.
Yeah, who's playing, though? I mean, come on. We know it's
MLS Cup. It's MLS Cup. It's between the Des Moines Menace and VSI Tampa Bay.
Ooh,
whoa, bro.
That's a deep cut right there.
That is.
It's Columbus Crew against the Portland Timbers.
Yes, it is.
Who, by the way, we work in an office that covers Major League Soccer professionally. We have a wall of brackets that people made at the beginning of the MLS Cup playoffs of who would get to the final and won. One bracket. Not had it right.
And this is not
had
like
Columbus even in the final.
This is not like one or two brackets. This is like 30 brackets on a wall.
It's a wall taped up. Small market fans, get your pitchforks out because no one saw it coming.
Yeah,
and Columbus Crew clearly earned it.
I don't think no one saw it coming is accurate. I did have the Portland Timbers in the final if I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I also had Montreal. But Matt, your quick thoughts before we get to Kai Kamara here and break down this this second match. We'll start with New York Columbus, and then in the second segment, we'll go all Western Conference. How did the Timbers do this?
Well, just want to point out that I had Columbus picked as MLS Cup winners back in March. I didn't stick with that, but I should have. The Timbers.
Sure, caveat. I'm just waiting for the radiator to start clanking. Yeah.
I think the Timbers, they were so dangerous on the break that it felt inevitable that they were going to get through, because once Dallas started throwing numbers forward, which they had to do because of the deficit, eventually one of the wingers was going to make good on what Valeri was giving him. He must have created about 6-7 chances. It was just good game planning. It was understanding game states, and it was understanding the strengths and weaknesses of the team you were facing. Caleb Porter got it right. He's been getting it right all throughout the playoffs, so well done to him.
Well done to Caleb Porter. They are going to MLS Cup. They're headed to Columbus. They're headed to MAPFRE Stadium. That game on Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, TSN, and RDS. You can basically watch it just about anywhere north and south of the border here. A massive game, a title on the line. Before we get to Kai Kamara, we're lucky to have him in the office today. Let's talk Red Bulls. Let's talk Crew. Dave, it just seemed to me that Crew SC were able to adapt more effectively in this series than the Red Bulls were. And when you meet each other that many times in the regular season, you're that familiar, and you each have identities that you swear by, it was always going to be the team that could throw a changeup, right, that got this thing done.
Yeah, and I think the Crew, they came out with a good game plan. What I think was frustrating, I was in the stadium for a lot of fans around me, was they come out with a great game plan in the first leg. They get the 2-0 win. You have a week off. You come into the second leg, it didn't look like anything changed from New York's point of view. They just tried to play the same way. There was a lot of long balls, a lot of attempts over the top. You have two fullbacks in Columbus who are going to outrun anyone on the wing for New York. Bradley Wright Phillips is not running away from anyone. That's just not his game. And you kept trying to play long ball after long ball over the top. And until the 89th minute, there wasn't any hope for New York. And that's what was frustrating, because the crowd was out. They were excited. Every corner kick, the first 15 minutes, the crowd got up on their feet. And New York just didn't give them anything to keep that flame alive.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of fans were not in the stadium around me when they finally did score.
Matt, the tactical battle seems to be won by the Crew. What do you take from this one? Are the Crew, I mean, over the course of the regular season, the Red Bulls can say, based on the stats, based on the performances, that they were the better team. But in the playoffs, the Crew figured this thing out. Why didn't the Red Bulls?
I don't know, because they had the answer in Anatole Lebong, who, I mean, came in for the last 20 minutes of the game and absolutely changed where it was played and how it was played. I'm not saying that the kid should have started, but I thought it's a sub that should have been made earlier. If the Crew are determined to force you into crosses and to defend in their own 18, which is exactly what they did, then you have to threaten them in the air. That's how teams have been getting at them all season, even with Gaston Sarro in the lineup. And Abong did that. I mean, they came within inches of getting a maybe the most dramatic late goal in league history. And it should have happened earlier. I got to think if the kid had gotten 15 more minutes, it would be a different... We would be talking about something different now.
Yeah, the radiator's going off.
Radiator disagrees with that.
If New York had scored that goal, they were great all season, but it would have been undeserved. Columbus was dominant over 180 minutes, and New York got one because they threw pressure forward, and Columbus absolutely 100% deserved
some questionable decisions or some questionable attempted clearances by Steve Clark on both those plays. Just to catch you up here, the 1-0 win for New York came on in a bong header, kind of a loose ball in the box that Lloyd Sam just whacked up into the air that he beats Clark to. And then the winner nearly comes from Bradley Wright Phillips in the 95th minute. This was one, I think it had the entire press box just kind of mouths agape, just wondering, oh my God, did that happen? Because it spins off the post. Now, had it gone in, we would have had one heck of a controversy because it looked like dead to rights, Bradley Wright Phillips offside on that play. But it didn't go in. Kai Kamara cleared it off the line. Here with us now, Kai Kamara of Columbus Crew SC. Kai? Welcome to the studio, man. We finally got you in here. You wanted an invitation.
I know. Finally into the studio and not, having, phone calls and doing it on the phone. So, yeah, thanks.
What do you think of the surroundings? Is it as swanky as you thought it might be?
It's nice. There's a lot of bubbleheads up, and we need to add a paper Kai next to the bubbleheads because, it deserves a space up there.
We'll get the paper Kai up there. We'll get the paper Nat Borchers, the paper Sasha Kleshin and Fabian Castillo a little bit sad on this day. So I don't think
I don't think we're going to get bubbleheads. Our heads are just too big to make a bubblehead out of it. So paper is definitely good enough.
So your bobblehead would be the longest bobblehead that there is in MLS history.
It would be pretty tall. The Dwayne DeRosario bobblehead has a long neck here, but yours would just have the long limbs and just...
Yeah, because now I have this little thing growing on my head, called my hair. So it's kind of hard to make a bobblehead out of it.
What if it was a bobble bun, just the bun bobbled?
That wouldn't be bad at all. Just anything bubble would be good.
You're going to the technology. Is it a bun? Is that what you call this?
I call it a bun. It definitely is the men bun. And that's what I was going for, and I got a men bun.
Interesting.
I want to own a men bun.
Branded the men. I got to tell you, I think you're on the back end of the trend. They've been disappearing in Brooklyn, man. I don't see them that
really?
Often. Yeah.
Well, I'm in Columbus, okay, things right. like... Things
so you're ahead
time,
of...
Things takes time, in Columbus.
You're like, ahead of the line in Columbus.
Yeah.
What if we offered you an honorary... they give out honorary PhDs for folks, who accomplish a lot.
Yep.
And then you've been on the show so much lately. What if we offered you an honorary host position? Would you accept that or was that a little too forward?
It's good. I can't say no, but I don't know if I'll say yes.
Oh, interesting.
What would we have to do to sweeten the deal?
What's for lunch? It depends.
There is the Chipotle down the street. I think we may have sealed our honorary host status with that
one. He told me earlier the Chipotle might be open down the street. It's not
No,
for
there's
sure.
multiple it's Chipotles. Not. There's going to be another one down the street.
This is Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
There's nothing on that. Now, let's get to the game because that's really what's important. You guys are going to MLS Cup and... You're making the rounds the day after. I was in the locker room. It didn't strike me as a big celebration. I was on the field last year in New England when the Revs won, and they were getting down. I know it was at home for them. Why the difference?
Yeah, it actually sounds really good to hear that saying that we're going to the MLS Cup. It's a great feeling, and I don't know. For me, I wanted to jump around because I haven't been there. I was all over the place, but. That's what our locker room has been like, guys are really focused, guys know, it's a big deal, but not too much of a big deal to like really be, nervous about or anything because we know we've played really good soccer this year. So everybody know where, we're supposed to be. So, coming into this game, last night, I actually feel like I was probably the most nervous out of everyone, and everybody was so calm and everybody was ready to play. So, and then after everything, it wasn't, guys weren't going too crazy. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to go too crazy about because we know there's one more game left. For me, I was just enjoying the moment because for so long, I just wanted to be there. And finally, not that saying, most of my teammates have been there before, but just knowing that we've played some good, soccer this year that we deserve, to be where we're at right now.
You got a star on your shirt for Columbus. You missed that by 1 year. Have you thought about that throughout the season or the playoffs?
I've missed a lot of championships, you know, all the way back in college and coming into the league, leaving Columbus and them winning it, going to Houston before Houston won it, leaving Kansas City winning it.
I didn't want to say all of them for you. I was like only going to say one.
Yes. But you know, those are all the motivation for how I've been conducting myself this year, and really saying it's all about the game now. It's nothing else on the side of the game. It's all about playing the game and trying to win something.
What's it like celebrating at a stadium that's not your own? Because part of that Revs deal was, I think they had like 45,000 people. The crowd was crazy. You had your nice little section up there at Red Bull Arena, but you're basically like lifting a cup with confetti in front of not very many people.
It's I've seen it before. You know, I've seen teams celebrate in our home turf a few times, and it's sad. You know, when you see that. Actually, when I've seen it before, I actually sat there to watch it, see what it feels like, mm-hmm. because I want to know what it feels like, you know, for the following year to go into it. And but being in the arena yesterday, in Red Bull Arena yesterday, you know, the fans were really supporting their teams. But the way, you know, they were towards us, and there were some of the players, you know, the behaviors and stuff that I really wanted to celebrate, and I really wish they were sitting out there and watching it. You know, it's not like, yeah, they want to rub it in their face because it's part of the game, but because we worked harder, you know, we feel like we deserve, you know, to move up to the cup. But it's nice to celebrate, you know, in somebody else's field, but nothing better than being in your own stadium.
You mentioned some of those emotions. Tony Chani got a talking to from UK. I mean, I'm sitting on the roof thinking, Tony, the one thing you can't do is get a red card here. What happened?
Brother,
what were you? What happened
Kai.
Down there? Like,
big brother
what
Kai.
Got him riled up? What were you saying to him?
No, it's one of those where even when we played in Columbus, played in Columbus last week, those guys, you know, we're not just, you know, playing just soccer. You know, they were really trying to get under our skins, you know, a few players, and you know, try to pick out the players that they can get under their skins. I'm not saying Tony's one of them, but so that's really what it was. And you know, even before this game, you know, talking to everybody, like, no matter what happens, we're finishing this game with 11 guys. You know, that's the only way to put ourselves in a better position. So obviously, you know, actually Greller was the one that stepped up to Tony. I saw it. He stepped up to him, and you know, he got really close to his face, mm-hmm. and all that. Tony didn't do anything. You know, I was just running back right away to make sure that, you know, that didn't escalate. That didn't go anywhere. You know, so I was there pushing Tony back and telling Tony to stay away from it. It's a final. You know, there's going to be a little bit of those here and there. But, I mean, they came up with some big hits and big tackles that, you know, something can happen. But at the end of the day, we came up top, and that's it.
Just so you know, I got texts from people overseas of that clip. That was the only
clip
of you and Tony getting in a little conversation.
Yeah, it's my
at
boy.
That moment.
Tony's my boy. I was just telling him how much I loved him.
Is that how you guys talk when you're in the living room together?
That's that West African talking saying, "I love you, brother."
Yeah, that's an angry "I love you." But hey, he stayed on
intense.
The field. That's what matters.
You've had lunch with us. You've seen, you know, yeah. You have all the African food.
There was
a lot of smiling.
Yeah. There was a lot of smiling at that point. It flip flopped 180 completely in that moment. You had a bird's eye view for that. You had a bird's eye view for the ball hitting the post. You were the guy who cleared it off the line. You said last night that you were just hoping you didn't get spaghetti legs and knock it in.
Yes.
Your view on that play, I mean,
yes.
Even Alexi Lalas on the broadcast had like that little whimper, just like the
one of those.
Yeah,
I got a few text messages like, "Don't give us a heart attack. Why not just get there before the ball actually got there?" But funny thing, you know, one of the things I thought about was obviously the best or worst or greatest miss of all time.
Oh,
in soccer.
Yeah, I remember this. I remember this
so,
miss.
For
Community America Ballpark?
How much of a second that happened, all that went through my head.
Yeah.
That's the same post angle where it hits and, you know, me trying to kick it in. So I'm like, I see it and I don't want to sprint right away, hit the post and hit you and go in.
Yeah.
So I was like trying to, because I saw the spin of the ball and I was like, okay, it's going to hit the post. And I need to, like, be careful the way I got to the ball. And I was just, again, I was just happy I was at the right place at the right time.
Best defensive play of your career?
No. Last week, actually, in Columbus, Sasha also had another shot. Was coming in, and, you know, I just threw my leg in the way. And it was probably going over Steve's leg and had that block. So Hopefully the best defensive players of my career would be, you know, next week.
Yeah. So MLS best 11, you could be forward and a defender in this thing.
No, actually, if they just give me a better rating in FIFA, you know, as one of my defensive skills.
What's your rating right now?
Rating's okay, but my defensive skill, I'm like 30 or 31. Ooh. I mean, look at almost all the headers I win on, you know, defensive corners and all that. It's nothing. So, no, but yeah.
Get a hit up the support desk, man. Get a little bit of a jump on that one. No Greg Berhalter in that game, though. And every time I hang out with Greg, and by hang out, I mean interview him, and by hang out, it's fair. It's not always super comfortable. He seems like a very buttoned up guy, at least forward facing. But people I talk to say that's not the way he is normally. Tell us about Greg Berhalter. What's it like playing for him? I need behind the scenes.
No, yeah, it's been really good. I got to be honest. There's not many coaches. I've played for a few, you know, numbers of coaches. There's not many coaches that I've played for. I don't think there's any coach I've played for that says, you know, how's your wife doing? You know, how's this doing? Mm-hmm. He sees something or hears something, and he pulls somebody to the side and asks them personally about situations off the field, you know, off soccer. And when you have somebody like that, you know, that's what makes a family, you know, because he does care. And he's not just asking you just to say, oh, I'm doing my job, to ask you. No, he asks you because he really does care. And so when you have, you know, a guy like him, you know, he is a nice guy. It's not just the way he dresses, but the way he dresses, that's actually how he acts. So, yeah.
How does he dress? And what does that say?
He's smooth, man. I think he's the best dressed coach in this league.
You think really? He's sharpest?
Yes, he's really sharp. Not sharper than me when I go to the games, but coaching-wise, he's pretty sharp.
So he won't be the one hooking me up with tickets, but I have to imagine, based on my trip to Columbus last week, in which every single person I ran into knew you. By the way, your cousin Eugene, who works at, the Marriott downtown.
Me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Eugene called me. He's like, I'm here with your boys. They say you guys went to Drillies to eat and all that. Yeah, but I was busy by the time he called.
Everybody knows you. How many people, I mean, your phone's got to just be filling up with ticket requests.
I it's going to be a lot. It's going to be, you know, breaking the bank somewhere. That's the thing. That's the thing with my brothers and sisters, you know, it just... Oh, my African family, you know, they call you. They're not buying the ticket. They're asking you to give them the ticket.
How does the hierarchy go?
The ranking system here. Who's
Is it who gets there first, or there's already a ranking system in place?
Well, there's a little bit of ranking, but, you know, when it comes down to it, let's say the first 15 is ranking, and then after that, everybody's in a big group. So I just throw it in there. Whoever texts me before Thursday, you know, that's when... You know, before the weekend, and I mean weekends, before Thursday, so Wednesday. Tuesday, Wednesday, you'll get a ticket. But if you come later than that, I'm sorry.
I'll text you on Wednesday. Don't worry.
You got to focus on that game day at that point.
Yes.
Now, everyone's going to be going to Columbus now for the final. Kai Kamara, tour guide, what's the one thing that they have to do? What's the perfect Saturday before MLS Cup final?
Oh, man, on a Saturday, usually I'm just used to nightlife on Saturday because obviously I'm, you know, during the game day, I'm just staying at home. But, you know, there's a place I really like to eat. It's out. I mean, they have one downtown and they have one on the Easton Town Center. It's called North Stars. They have really good, you know, breakfast or brunch on a Sunday, you know, which would be perfect just before the game. North Star, and get their Cloud 9 pancakes. It's the best pancake.
I'm pretty sure I went there. I'm pretty sure. They have like a blackberry jam that's on everything.
Yes.
Definitely.
You've been there already?
Yeah, definitely went there last week.
Check that off the list then.
I will vouch for that one for sure.
Yes. It's a good place. I usually go there mostly every Sunday. And everyone that's visited us, you know, my sister from England and everywhere, we've taken them there. And they're like, wow, that's some good food.
So that's the beginning of planning. You got any goal celebration planning going? I mean,
can't tell you. You know,
is it going to be an MLS Cup level?
You answered that really quick.
Yeah, you were quick there.
God, I don't know. Not me.
MLS Cup level celebration. Hardship Japan is already worth an MLS Cup, you know, level celebration. But just scoring a goal there, it will be, you know, just enough for me, you know, to score a goal in the MLS Cup. Just, I mean, again, it's been so many years. And just to say I'm going to play in my first one, and it's going to be with the first club that, you know, I ever played for professionally. It's already, you know, a big celebration for me. So something that hasn't been arranged yet, I got to be honest. But I know, you know, a few of the guys, yeah. everybody comes up with, hey, we should do this today. We should do this today. So, you know, but they all come and run it by me because
you've got the veto.
Yeah,
I don't think
I'll tweak it. I'm like, okay, let's do this.
How often you steal ideas?
A lot.
So they run it by you, but you're scoring.
Yeah, right. A lot. Just tweak it a little bit, and it makes you feel good. Yeah. You
know, is this like, a practice thing? Is this like in training, finishing drills?
This is usually just like...
Spur of the moment.
Spur of the moment. At the game, getting ready to go out, you know, because usually I'm always dancing in the locker room. That's how I prepare for games. That's what keeps my nerves down. I'm usually in there just dancing, and then somebody would just, you know, one or two guys gets up and dance here and there, and go, hey, we should try that. And they're like, that's it.
Have you guys started talking about Portland at all? Have you started thinking about what that matchup's going to be like?
I have to be honest. I told the boys just before we walked out for warm-ups, because the game was done just before we walked out for warm-ups, and I said to them, we're hosting Portland. We got to make sure we're hosting this game. We're playing this game in Columbus, so come on, boys, let's go do this. And that was the only time, you know. But I'm sure, you know, when we get back to work tomorrow, then that's when we start watching videos and get back to work.
Fernando Adi's doing his best Kai Kamara impersonation over the last month. Did you give him any advice?
He's a big dude, man. Yeah. He's a big dude. He's a handful, you know, done well. Again, to have two teams of, you know, us and Portland, you know, really in the final, you know, big 6 foot plus, you know, strikers in the middle. So it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a fun game.
Do you guys mark each other, sorry, on corner kicks?
No, I don't mark anyone in corner kicks. I just try
that
to
would get
the
your
ball.
Defensive rating
Monty's
up.
Got a 30 in FIFA. He's not.
I'm saying that's how you get
it
up.
He's just hanging out. He's just like, yeah, kick it up there. I just win it.
Raise your hand on national TV. Say I'm marking the best attacker.
I just win it. I just find the ball and win it. That's all.
2-1 in September, late September, they came to Mapfre Stadium and won. What do you remember from that game?
It was frustrating, I got to be honest, because I felt like we played better and we knew what we had to do. I think Adi scored twice. Did he?
I think so.
Yeah, and it was really shut him down, and we didn't do well in that. So that's going to be, you know, another focus for us again this week to really, you know, be ready for what, you know, he's going to do, because he's really very, very dangerous for them in that middle.
Before I let you go here, we're getting the, you know, Chipotle, like, bat signal here that you got to take off. There was a little of a weird moment last night. Laser pointers, you're not a big fan of laser pointers, huh?
No,
I mean, yeah.
No, that's the first time I've seen it in the MLS.
Yeah, came out of nowhere. It was coming on your face.
Usually
yeah.
I've seen it internationally, you know, playing in CONCACAF Champions League, or, you know, playing back home in Nations Cup, African Nations Cup qualifiers. But then yesterday, all of a sudden, every time, maybe, you know, I get hit, I'm down, and then I just see this little thing in my eye.
How much does,
like,
that affect you when it hits you from that?
It's really bad, actually. Yeah, before I didn't really think about it that much, because I see it on TV sometimes, and you're just like, oh, wow, somebody's got a laser.
Right.
But actually, when it was hitting me in the eye, because I can see directly where it was coming from, and it was like, it was really sharp. And I was just like, it's not good, the fact that I had, you know, Mohamed Saeed hit me with a ball in my eye just 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to protect this one eye I have left.
Oh,
you know?
Man, Mohamed was just trying to get you back.
yeah.
Get
so
you back for all
exactly,
the
there we go.
No laser pointers, I assume, in Columbus on Sunday. MLS Cup, 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, TSN, and RDS. Before I let you go, Kai, quickly, what's the scene going to be like? When you're thinking about game day, what's the thing you look forward to most?
The fans. Got to be honest, you know, black and gold. We're going to fill up that stadium, and they're going to give us the extra energy that we need. And, you know, going to be nervous. But, hey, the fans are definitely going to help you going. So I can't wait. I can't wait. It's going to be really big.
A lot of dancing pregame to kill those
definitely.
Nerves. Definitely. All right, tune in. MLS Cup Final. Before we get to break, guys, before we get to the Western Conference, find out exactly how Portland sealed the deal against FC Dallas. I'm going to throw something at you, and I think a lot of people are thinking this right now based on home field advantage. Are Crew SC the favorites? Remember, had they not blown out New England on that last day of the regular season, they wouldn't even be playing this thing at Crew Stadium, but I think that's a huge advantage.
It was D.C. They
Eastern Conference team. Yes, that sounds
obviously
right.
Obviously, home field has been big throughout the year, but if you look at what Portland has done on the road the last really the last half of the season, and then in these playoffs, I actually think the Timbers are the favorites in this one.
I still think it's the Crew. I think you're going to see a different Crew than you did first Red Bulls. It's going to be the Crew that played the regular season, open and attacking. They're going to have a great crowd behind them. I think they are the favorites.
Well, 1-0 win for the New York Red Bulls. Not enough. Columbus Crew SC on to the MLS Cup Final. They'll host the thing against the Portland Timbers out west. Entertainment, as always. We'll break it down next.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I get this baby, baby, I be. The way this baby, baby, I me. Electing choke, she didn't hear me.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, Dave Goss, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe, and that was Dallas Bonton. That is the request from Kai Kamara, who, of course, leaves our studio to go eat some Chipotle. Big thanks to him for joining us here in New York City. Didn't have to stick around. He just got the one day to stick around. Then back to the Crew home base. That's because they're hosting MLS Cup at Matt Free Stadium. On the other side, the Portland Timbers are traveling to Central Ohio. And as Matt said in the last segment, he thinks that they're favorites. Matt, what about this series victory against FC Dallas makes them favorites? They got the 2-2 in the second leg, Adi and Lucas Milano. That little shimmy shake, we'll talk about that in just a second. Hollingshead and Baz Perez on the other side, but it wasn't enough. A 5-3 aggregate win. Why were they the better team?
I think they can hurt you in a bunch of different ways offensively. If you're the Crew, if you look at what they did against New York, they said, okay, we're going to be really comfortable defending in our own 18. We're going to try to win the game physically there. And against Bradley Wright Phillips, that worked. But when they had to deal with a big, strong number nine in Anatole Bong, it didn't work. And Fernando Adi is a bigger, stronger, better version of that player. If you let him post up in the 18, he's going to just dominate you physically, and he's going to score goals, and he's going to create goals. Now, okay, so then you say, all right, well, we're not going to play in the 18. We're going to come up, and we're going to play our usual game. That leaves space in behind on the counterattack for guys like Lucas Milano, Rodney Wallace, and Dairon Asprilla. So it's a pick your poison, and I don't think there's an easy solution against Portland these days. I just think they present too many ways to beat you, and I'm not sure that Columbus are the team that has the answer.
One of the things that I saw in these second legs was you had four teams that had these strong identities, but when you got into bad moments, you ended up seeing, and Matt's talked about this on this show, a lot of crossing from the open field from Dallas and from New York. The two most dominant players in both games was Fernando Adi and Kai Kamara. Those were the difference makers for their teams, and New York and Dallas didn't have a version of that at all. Dallas brings Blas Perez in late, and he gives them a little bit of a spark, but Fernando Adi physically right now is just dominating games. I mean, he puts center backs on his back like it's not a big deal. He holds play up. He can run in behind. He's got good feet. He's scoring. I think he's been the best player in the playoffs across any team, and stuff to say when teams get knocked out in one game, but he's just playing at an all-time high level, and you got to tip your hat to Porter. He made the tough decisions, brought Wallace in, dropped Milano. Milano scored off the bench. It worked out for him, and Diego Valeri as well brings him back into the lineup, and it all went the right way.
Dallas, after this match, of course, very, very disappointed, but not a catastrophe for them as a club. It seems like their trajectory is up, 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 and the youth that they have and the longevity they seem to have with this squad, that's got to be a positive. Why did they fall short, though, Matt? When you look at this team, when you look at what they've done, I read your column afterwards, which for most MLS fans is must read, and there was some focus on David Teixeira.
Yeah,
is it bigger? It's got to be bigger than that, though, right?
I mean, I think there are limitations that they have with their fullback play a little bit. They could have gotten, I think, better out of that. And I know Hollingshead had the goal, but he didn't add enough in support possession, the type of Chris Wingert, very simple move the ball passing. So I think that's something for him to work on for next year. And I think obviously they need to figure out a little bit more what their central defense is, whether it's going to be Zach Lloyd for the long term or whether Walker Zimmerman is the guy they want to go to. But really, I do think it was the the drop off from a guy like Adi as the number nine to a guy like David Teixeira. Teixeira is a good, I think, guy off the bench in MLS, but you can't have a guy like that and expect to win MLS Cup. If you go back the last 7-8 years, every team that's won MLS Cup has had a legit elite goal scorer as the guy leading the line.
For both of you, is it a worry, and me and Simon were talking a little bit about these matchups earlier today, is it a worry that you see two fantastic young coaches that we've talked about, in Jesse Marsh and Oscar Pareja, and that there was no adjustment in the second leg, and it seemed like both teams panicked from the first minute, the players on the field? Is there a worry long-term, or is there a need for these coaches maybe to develop that? Dallas, I thought, stuck to their style against Seattle very late. But in this one against Portland, it looked like they were pushing from the first moment.
Yeah, I just think Fabian Castillo is such a key for them, and wing play is such a key for them. Like, he was not on this series, and when he's your best player, that's how you're going to get by. And as you said, Fernando Adi is just absolutely carrying the timbers on his back. Oh, well, by the way, he's got a bunch of really good horses, and Nagby and Valeri and the rest of them pulling the cart as well. I asked Jesse Marsh in the lead-up to this game what wrinkle he was going to throw at the Crew, because you saw in that first match that what Crew SC did was able to throw off the Red Bulls and take them out of their comfort zone. And I thought that they were going to have to do the same thing, especially with that 2-0 deficit. And he kind of repeated the mantra of, you know, we're going to be us. We're going to be us. We have to get back to being us. You know, I think they did have some wrinkles, but it obviously wasn't enough. And over the course of 5 games, I just think that Greg Berhalter figured out how to take away their strength, which is creating chances of winning the ball upfield. And that's for me, Doyle, that's what I'm looking for in a coach, right, is that ability to adapt and recognize what it is that you have to take away, because you're always going to, you know, the flip side is you're going to give something up, but how do you best use your team's strengths? And I think that's what Caleb Porter and Berhalter have been able to do. They've been able to see the strengths very clearly of their team as well as the opponent and say, okay, how do we magnify ours and how do we maybe scrub theirs a little bit and minimize them?
Yeah, I think all four coaches actually made adjustments. The difference with Jesse Marsh and Oscar Pareja is that they made them a little bit too late. I think if you go through the data, there's a lot to support making your first sub by the 55th minute. Instead of most coaches wait for the 60th minute or even the 70th minute. And I thought that sort of fortune favored the bold throughout these playoffs. And that was certainly the case in these two series, because look, the bringing on Blas Perez and shifting to the 4-4-2 was a game-changing sub for Dallas. Bringing on Anatole Bong and switching to the 4-4-2 was a game-changing sub for New York. It's just that the game changed a little bit too late. And it's worth noting, both of those switches have downsides, right? Because you open yourself up for the counterattack against both teams. You allow the speed of Milano or Finlay to be telling in those situations. But you gotta be bold, and you gotta be a little bit brave. And I think they were just a little bit too late.
And Dallas, one opportunity in the first half.
Right.
Like, at halftime, I was talking to Red Bulls fans all week, and you're saying New York has to be up 1-0 at halftime. Same for Dallas. You got to get a lead and have something to play off of, and one opportunity the entire first half. It's just, that's not even how Dallas has played throughout the year, even right, when they've had bad games. And that's the part that I think, and I look at Berhalter last year against New England and then this year against New York, and the way he's changed, clearly changed the way he sees the playoff series, that for Marsh and for Pareja, that I think they have to learn something for next year. Of that 2-game series, it's different than the way the flow of a season goes, that you have to, like you said, be able to zero in on the other team's strengths and find a way to affect it.
Yeah, then it comes down to execution, right? And I think if you're looking at Dallas, you know, they did what they needed to at times in these playoffs, especially against Seattle, but I think the execution just wasn't there against the Timbers. It comes on set pieces. It comes in the final third, and we were talking about it a little bit in here today when we got into the office, wondering about Mauro Diaz and maybe why he kind of is invisible sometimes and such a game changer at others. You know, I think they found a way to push him out of the game, and when he doesn't have the wingers around him on and making the right runs, he just has trouble affecting the game. And Blas Perez, I think, changed a lot for them, but as Matt said, too little, too late. Oscar Pareja calls this season a success. Of course, Caleb Porter is going to. They're headed to MLS Cup. What do you build on, and what do you look at if you're Dallas, Matt? If you're looking at this season and you're saying, we're trying to build a long-term you know, I don't know if dynasty is the right word, but a long-term power, a long-term team that is in the playoffs and competing for MLS Cups. What makes you excited going to the offseason, and do you have any concerns?
Well, they clearly have the process right. I think you just keep doing what you're doing if you're FC Dallas. Obviously, they might have a decision to make when it comes to Fabian Castillo, if they see a really, really big check headed their way. Everybody has a price, so that's the big one. The other big one is trying to figure out an upgrade to that center forward role. Blas Perez is not going to get younger, and I think David Teixeira is who he is, and I think Tesho Akindele is more of a winger than a guy who can lead the line. So I think those are the two big ones, but the reality is for this team, you stay the course and you aim to go one more round next year.
So you were the only one that picked Portland in the final. Mm-hmm. What was it? Because I'm looking back at it now, and Portland's playing phenomenal,
yep,
but they're the one of the four, even in the final four, where it wasn't really laid out that this was 100% coming.
It just felt to me like they had the most game changers in the best form. It felt to me like, you know, Adi was heating up, and you were starting to say, man, he's basically a matchup nightmare. And then with Nagby and Valeri, you knew they could keep the ball, and you knew they could create chances. For so long with them, it had been the guys up top finishing, and once Adi figured that out, and they said, you're our guy, we're going to go with you, I started to think, you know, maybe this team can do it, because for as much as we, you know, wondered about that back line and the lack of speed in the middle, you know, they have the experience in big games. They had the track record at the end of the season, and their road record all of a sudden was really, really good. And you knew over the course of two ties that road record was going to be massive. If you could get a road result, all of a sudden you're coming back home and you feel good, or you're hosting at home and you go on the road and you say, yeah, we can get a 2-2. We can, you know, we can score a couple goals and hold them off the board. I felt like they were hitting their stride at the right time, and I think the Columbus Crew are in the same place. We haven't really talked about the future for the Red Bulls. They had a great season here.
This was the debate in the office
today.
Yeah,
a supporter's shield season.
This was the big one.
And it started up this morning with this Dax McCarty news about him having his option picked up by the Red Bulls. He had a team option for next season. They picked it up, but there are some opinions in this office, I am one of them, that there's a decent chance he won't be a member of the Red Bulls next year, and that there's a good chance that there's going to be some serious shakeup with this team just based on the seasons guys had and maybe the cap hits that they'll now either desire or be at. Am I crazy to think that Dax McCarty might not be there next year?
It's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, anything could happen in MLS, and especially with this franchise. But I think that, you know, the guy's been an integral part of two supporter shields in 3 years, and he's the captain of the team. His salary is not prohibitive. He's in the prime of his career. It would be pretty crazy to make that move to me. I think the guys who I could see going on the trading block or being sold, I guess, would be Lloyd Sam and Bradley Wright Phillips. If you're looking for major pieces, big salary cap hits to be on the way out, those are the two. And bear in mind, of course, that the Red Bulls, they're not going to bring back Roy Miller. They're not going to bring back Dane Richards. So that's already a pretty good chunk of salary that's been opened up.
The thought process for everyone out there who's maybe a little confused, yeah, by what the conversation is, that if you give up, if you extend Dax McCarty, you pick up his option, you have the potential of losing him for nothing next year. So you try and get something when he's at an MLS best 11 season,
yep,
in his prime this year in a trade to then help build up your team. Now, I think, and from watching them, and I'm not sure, but it seems like this team could be at its best if they bring someone in to play a more attacking midfield role and bring Sasha back a little bit deeper to play one of the Felipe Dax roles. So if that's your thought process, then Felipe or Dax isn't starting next season. And do you put someone on the bench, or, like you said, do you go out and you get something for it to help fill in at right back or center back or at the attacking midfield or the outside midfield?
I think
roles?
Much more likely scenario, if this was to happen, and we're just spitballing here, this is the fun stuff. This is the, yeah,
the speculation.
This is the old rumor mill here that basically is coming from nothing but our discussion at this point, is that, look, it's a lot harder to find a number 10 to move Sasha back than it is to find an affordable 6 to play back behind and let Felipe go box to box. So to me, that's where it's at. It's a matter of where they're at in the salary cap, what perhaps an Orlando or somewhere else here in MLS might offer, and what the Red Bulls see as the trajectory of their future. So, you know, if you're losing a big chunk of players this next year, maybe you want to go young. I don't know. I'm spitballing here. We'll see what happens with the Red Bulls. That could be a possibility. Orlando would seem to make sense. But let us know what you think, Red Bulls fans. Let us know what you think of the season as well, because I've been paying attention to Twitter this morning, and not a cheerful place for Red Bulls fans. And I understand why, but Matt, maybe you can give me a little insight into what's going on in Red Bulls world this morning.
Well, I mean, just saw their hopes clang off the post and go out. This is the same post that 2 years ago when Omar Cummings hit it, the ball went in, and they were eliminated by the Dynamo. So it's, look, it feels, I think, for a lot of Red Bulls fans, like the same old, same old. If there are substantial off-season moves and turnover, then it will, in its way, be the same old, same old. I think what these fans want is some stability and incremental improvement. And they won't, I mean, right now, obviously, I think a lot of people are burned by the way the season ended, but there's still a chance to be a better team in 2016 than they were in 2015. And I think that's what any fan base wants.
Well, I think the worry, Red Bulls fans were saying to me this week, you know, we got to go one step farther. We went to the Eastern Conference Championship. We already won Supporters Shield. We have to go to MLS Cup. I think that's tough because this is a whole new team, right? You went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, but it's a whole new squad, a new coaching staff, obviously new management. So this team, I think you have to look at this year in a kind of vacuum and then say, from here on, can you improve? Not saying, well, you did the same thing last year, now you got to shake everything up. Because I don't think that that's really the way you're looking at it. This was year one of this project.
Right.
You got to the Eastern Conference Finals. Can you do better next year? Can you get to MLS Cup, I think, is the key. My worry would be getting rid of a guy like Dax or an integral part like that, that maybe you can't immediately improve, and maybe in 4 years you're better in that role. But next year, can you compete at the level that you are at now?
That's the balance.
Can I just say that I think it's insane to even consider blowing up the central midfield? I don't think they need to bring in a new number 10. I think Sasha, he was among the league leaders in chances created from the run of play, total chances created, big chances created, and assists. He had a bunch of goals from the run of play as well. I think the idea of bringing in a more traditional number 10 is nuts, because traditional number 10s don't defend like he does. So if you bring in a guy like Javier Morales, you can't press high. You just totally upend the identity that they tried to establish, did establish this year.
Does anyone in the world say it's insane as calmly and quietly as Matt Doyle does?
Probably.
Just pure insanity.
Probably not. No, David, that is wrong. Yeah. Andrew, that is wrong. Let us know what you think, either the victors.
Go wash your hands.
Yeah, the victors or the vanquished, either of the four teams, or maybe you're just a fan and you have some hot takes to drop on us at Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Nice sizzle. When we come back, bring in some more sizzle, because you know what? I just don't understand this best 11 uproar.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. Trouble is indeed on the way. Swag might be on the way too if you write in and we decide to read your email or tweet on the radio. We had Kai Kamara sign 4 mini balls. We've got some Crew SC scarves. We've got some Crew SC hats. If you hit us immediately, we might think about putting those in the mail in time for Sundays. Actually, I will be in Columbus. So if you're in Columbus, you can hit us up, and I'll just hand them to you.
You
might have to meet me. I don't know. We'll see about that.
No way Andrew Wiebe has extra space in the carry-on to bring swag.
No, you definitely
you have
right
all your sweat. You have to get all your sweaters packed.
Yeah, I definitely do. Hit us up at Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Let's jump into the mailbag, Dave. There is some disagreement, let's call it, about the MLS Best 11. First of all, who made the best 11? That's a good place to start.
Well, let's start with this email, and then you can figure out who made the best 11. But Paul W. Zimmer from Milwaukee says it's called the best 11, not the best 4-4-2. It doesn't matter whether MLS teams actually play with a 3-4-3. The award is to honor the best 11 players that could legitimately field a team, and this 11 can. For instance, I bet this 11 would beat an MLS 11 that dropped Keane and any of the three center backs and swapped in any two fullbacks in the league. Choosing it this way is going to result in at least three defenders, two, probably three midfielders, and two forwards, since any less at each spot would be terrible tactics in a real
game.
So
clearly you didn't know who was in the best 11 because you wanted to skip right over it. Here's the best 11 for you. Luis Robles, Laurent Simon, Matt Hedges, Kendall Waston. That is the rear guard, so to speak, in the midfield. Ethan Finley, Dax McCarty, Benny Feilhaber, and Fabian Castillo. And then up top, Jovinko, Kamara, and Keane. I don't have a problem with this. I said that on Twitter last night, and the pitchforks came out. People didn't seem to agree with me or Paul. Is that Paul Zimmer?
Paul Zimmer.
Yeah, I'm with Paul. Look, it's a best 11. It's not a best team that could compete in a reasonable way, and you have to have left backs and right backs team. Look, I want outside backs to be honored, but I keep beating the same drum. It's not been a good year for outside backs, so I don't have a huge problem. Name me who comes in, and then we'll have a discussion. Maybe, Matt, you can do that.
It's tough. I mean, because you're right. It has been a down year for outside backs, but I do believe that the best of 11 has to be represented. Everybody in MLS plays with fullbacks. I think there needs to be two fullbacks on there. Waylon Francis, Chris Tierney, Jorge Villafania all have an argument at left back. Right back's a little bit tougher. There hasn't been one clear standout, whereas last year there were two in Sean Franklin and DeAndre Yedlin. I understand both sides of the argument. I just prefer to look at the best 11 as something representative of the year that was as it was played aesthetically and tactically on the field.
What would you say to teams that have been playing, say, a lot of center backs on the outside at times?
Which teams?
I think you just get into – I guess my point being that using the word representative gets into – that's a tough argument to
right,
me
so
because every team does things different ways. You know, is Javon Watson a true right back? Is, you know, like, are teams actually playing that way, or are they playing in a functional way that fits their personnel?
And Paul's point here is, where do you draw the line? Is it who's the best number 10? Who's the best number 6? What if a team plays with wingers and another team doesn't? How do those players get looked at as outside midfielders?
Does the midfield
midfielders
have to have perfect balance with the left winger, right winger, and two central midfielders?
Exactly.
If a lot of teams are playing 4-5-1s, I mean, I just...
Does this represent, then, the best 11 players in MLS this year?
I think it's pretty close. I think it's a great approximation of it. I'm trying to think of who I would put in the midfield. Who do you jab in ahead of these guys? I mean,
well, it's the best 11 seasons, right?
Right.
Because you could say, well, Trapp's been a best 11 player, but he missed so much time that maybe he doesn't go into that category. And I don't think anyone is, but Kamar Lawrence is, but he missed so much time with international duty
games, yeah,
that he doesn't go in. So I think that's part of it as well, Doyle.
I mean, David Villa had 18 goals and 8 assists. I'm pretty sure if he was offered to Dallas straight up for Matt Hedges, Dallas would have taken him.
Sure, I understand that. But I think you do want to have some balance. That's why you have the positions. I just don't think that those denote we're going to run this team out 2 days from now, and they better get a result, and they better have balance. And this guy playing at left back better have played there his whole career, and that be a dedicated position. I guess I'm not dogmatic about this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the whole fun with these awards and with something like the Best 11 is that we all have different approaches to it. So, Dave, like when you say something like, you know, it's about the best season or it's about the total season, like I don't even know if there's that delineation. We're all just kind of voting for it at random. I will say I think 10 of my 11 were on here, so I'll claim that one. But continue. What's our next email?
I don't know if you want to claim that one. Otherwise, it might just mean that they take Andrew's sheet and no one else's votes count. We have another email here from James Chelminski, and he says, hey, guys, quick question. Are these not the best/most insane/most hectic playoffs ever? I only began following in 2010 after Donovan's Algeria goal, but I cannot remember a previous playoffs as dramatic as these. He did say he's an LA Galaxy fan, so maybe being neutral and not stressing about LA makes it different, but the Sporting Timbers series, Seattle, LA, Dallas versus Seattle, and then, of course, the two series that we just experienced. He says,
Montreal yay. Club is very good, too.
Right, yay or nay, best and or most dramatic playoffs ever?
I think it's up there. The one that immediately came to mind for me was 2004 which had a bunch of really great series, that the Wizards came back from a 2-0 first leg deficit against the defending champion Quakes and won 3-2 in the first round. Colorado and LA went, knives to each other's throats in that first round. DC beat New England on penalties in the conference finals. And then that cup that year between DC and Kansas City was awesome. So 2004 is way up there, but this year has an argument.
I'm just going to say I'm very happy to hear how all this came about as far as his MLS fandom. That Algeria moment, when you're looking back at like the birth of North American soccer fans, and specifically, obviously, U.S. soccer fans in that sense, I think 10, 15 years down the line, you're going to have a lot of commonality on saying, hey, that goal, that tournament, that run, that was all very, very special for me. We're in the middle of, I shouldn't say the middle. We're almost done with the MLS Cup playoffs. One more game next Sunday, December 6th, 4 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Unimas, TSN and RDS, Columbus Crew SC, hosting the Portland Timbers at Map Free Stadium. A massive game. ETR is going on the road. I'll be down there Wednesday. If you want to hang out, you want to do something, want to get a beer, let us know. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. Big thanks to Kai Kamara. Big thanks to you guys. We'll catch you on Thursday.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.